Modern Casserole is a podcast of three hungry women. We met working at a food magazine, and each week we talk about food, culture, what we cooked, and what we ate in San Diego and beyond. I'm Olivia, and this is Modern Casserole. Well, here we are back for episode 9. This is our penultimate episode of season 1. So we'll have one more after this. So thanks for tuning in. We were just catching up about how hot it is out there. So it kind of prompted the idea of, you know, what are we actually in the mood for cooking or eating, considering the heat? So we wanted to talk today a bit about assembly cooking. And Maria and Felicia, just kind of throwing it to you guys to see, you know, what you've been up to in the kitchen or out and about.
Well, we've just been eating a ton of salads lately because I think it's like you said, it's so hot. It's almost all you want to eat, right? And even dressing-wise, kind of wanting lighter, more vinaigrettes. And so I've been experimenting with different vinaigrettes, and I finally get it. Like, I never understood that whole, like, fancy vinegar shop. You know, I'd go in and taste them and be like, this is stupid. Why does this even exist? But now that I've been getting into vinaigrettes, I'm like, ooh, I could make some really phenomenal things. You know, I want some white peach balsamic, but I don't know if I want it enough to actually go buy $20 vinegar, but I've mostly been sticking to just balsamic vinaigrettes and you know, leafy green salads. And I had one little disaster. I tried to make a lemon vinaigrette, and I don't know why it went horribly wrong. It was bitter and not tasty.
It was probably the lemons themselves, you think, were just on the bitter side?
It could have been. And I mean, the olive oil I use is okay. It's not like the best. So I think that's the thing, right? When you make something simple, the inputs have to be pretty good. So I guess my kind of skanky lemons and mediocre olive oil, the sum was not greater than the parts. I'll say that. But I'd love to hear what your kind of go-to vinaigrettes are.
I'm a lazy dressing maker. I mean, I have made the fancy stuff and the proper, you know, ratio dressings, but I actually just dress my salads like right on it. I drizzle the olive oil straight on. I just drizzle the lemon, or like you said, I'm using different vinegars, and I also keep that really simple. I literally in my cabinet, I have like a red wine vinegar, apple cider, white vinegar, and a balsamic. Those are kind of like my main ones. I do have like a rice wine vinegar and things like that for like, you know, kind of doing more Asian-ish dishes, but, you know, keep it pretty like straightforward. And again, everything I just like eyeball to taste, but, right onto the salad. And I always find that, like, I just like, you know, a big pinch of salt and pepper. Unless I'm using arugula, I leave the pepper out and just toss it all together. And then what I actually think of as far as like balancing the dressing is it's what I'm putting in the salad. So if I need that little sweet hit, you know, I just add in, like lately I've been doing plums or different stone fruits that I just chop up into small pieces. So that way when you're eating the salad, you get those little like zings of sweetness. So that's kind of my method right now, which again is like the ultimate, like, it's like an assembly dressing.
I love that. That's definitely how Methy makes, like, that's his salad technique. He's a great salad maker. I guess I've just been trying to switch it up, but you're right. Like, it actually is the easiest thing in the world to just dump it right on the salad and you mix it as you toss. Yeah. What about you, Maria?
Even with, because I don't go so far as to make a vinaigrette. I just have a few different good vinegars that I toss directly on the salad with the olive oil. And I will say, you know, when you buy some of those more pricey vinegars, like I think I've talked about it before, I'm obsessed with this Cara Cara Vanilla Orange Balsamic Vinegar from Baker and Olive. But when you get that bottle, like it's so strong, it lasts about a year. Like, it doesn't take a lot to get a lot of flavor. So it's not like, you know, it's a total wash in terms of expense because it lasts a long time. It's really high quality. The other one that I really like lately is so simple, is apple cider vinegar and olive oil with a little salt and pepper, little different sweeter tang with that blend. And the other thing I've been doing, which I love, I don't know what you guys think about this, but I've been obsessed with I've always been obsessed with it, the Bitchin' sauce, the almond creamy sauce. That, and I get a tub of the La Chilena salsa, which I feel like is San Diego's iconic salsa that you get from the grocery store. And I mix those two together with like feta on some greens. And then it's, I guess, more or less like oil free.
So it's like a creamier like salsa.
Yeah, it's not really
combination.
A dressing per se, but it's salsa and sauce. Mm-hmm. So it's saucy and it's good. And I love it.
That sounds good. Yeah, another thing actually I forgot to mention for like dressings is I use tahini to make a tahina, and I'll like thin it out a little bit, you know, if I'm doing for a dressing. I also, when I first went to Israel, one of my friends there, she'd use hummus and like thin it out a little bit with like extra lemon and even a little bit of water just to kind of thin it out and use that as a dressing. And I was like, oh, that's like a genius idea. Mm-hmm. So those are things I kind of use if I want like a creamier dressing. I've done like, you know, those like classic American, like that broccoli salad, you know, that would be like coated in mayonnaise with like red onion and like, I don't know what was in there, sunflower seeds and raisins.
Sugar.
Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah,
yes,
lots of
I
sugar.
Love that
it's,
salad.
It's a good salad, right? Because it's like sweet and it's tart and it's like, it's all these good things. Well, I like years ago had like been, was craving that, but didn't want all the mayo and was able to make kind of an approximation with the tahini. So I think it's a good like thing to have in the cabinet for all sorts of reasons, because yeah, you get that creamy note without, you know, without the mayo, which has its own value. But, you know, it was really great in the salad because, like I said, it usually has like sunflower seeds and kind of like a nutty kind of flavor to it. So this kind of brought it like 10 times. So
I have made really that salad with my cashew cream that
love.
It was years and years ago, but it works. So I think there's something to be said for those nut-based or seed-based type things that you can substitute in. Because I love a good peanut salad, or, you know, peanut dressing.
On
the Thai side. And you can do that with almond butter. So there's a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it brings a flavor. I was just thinking, like, I mean, I used to not like mayo, but now, like, on certain things, it has its place, especially a good mayo. But I feel like the flavor of these different nut butters, like, you know, you want to taste that actual thing instead of mayo being that like kind of, I don't know, like go between.
Ball of fat?
Yeah, it's just kind of like there to like bind things, or sometimes just like, you know, to bring a little bit of moisture or something. But, the nut butters have like the flavor on top that really adds to it. So not to knock mayo. I don't want anybody to think I'm talking
about
mayo.
I don't want to knock mayo either. I have an aunt, my little Korean aunt, and I don't know if this is like a Korean dressing because, you know, potato salads and things like that are really popular and now like modern Korean cuisine.
But I didn't know that actually. I want to know more about that.
It's interesting, right? Because you see it sometimes on a, like a Ponchon presentation, they have this kind of Americanized version of potato salad, but she makes this mayo salad, which I think is really just mayonnaise, vinegar, and sugar. It's so delicious. It's so delicious. But it's simple and, you know. What kind of mayo do you ladies like? Are you sticklers about a certain brand? Because I've tried so many and then, you know, you want
quality. It depends on the thing, right? Like, I love mayonnaise. I'll just say it. Like, I do.
I know it's really off
for like a sandwich. Like, I don't know. I'd use any kind of mayonnaise. Or then I make the vegan garlic sauce, which is basically mayonnaise for more Middle Eastern stuff. But I really, I really love that sweet the sweet mayonnaise that they use in like Asian pastries,
the
hot dog pastries.
The Kewpie? What's that called? Is that Kewpie?
Is it the Kewpie? Is it the Kewpie that has
it's
that
a
like
Japanese...
sweetness?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Well, I think I don't know if it's. It'd be interesting to look it up. It's iconically known as Kewpie mayo, because I think that was the first brand that came to the United States, or that was introduced to the United States that I'm familiar with. But it does have a sweeter profile, and I don't know if it's, you know, if it's like Best Foods, a brand that everybody just kind of calls Kewpie mayo now, mm-hmm. or if it's the style that's specifically Asian or Japanese.
I don't know. But I love that sweetness, whereas one thing I can't stand even a little bit is Miracle Whip. I think that is the most disgusting stuff. Like, it is revolting to me. I don't know. Do you guys have a feeling about Miracle Whip?
I don't know the last time I had it, even.
I used to love Miracle Whip when I was a kid. And there was this experience where my grandma made us sandwiches because we were driving home from the cabin, and my dad bit into his sandwich while he was driving, and he threw a fit because she used Miracle Whip. And he was like, "She knows I hate Miracle Whip." So,
oh my gosh.
I don't care for, like, and it's funny because I don't normally care for the very tangy versions of mayo. Like, the only thing I probably don't like from Trader Joe's is the Trader Joe's mayonnaise. I think it's wretched.
Oh, I don't. That's what
I don't think I've
using.
Ever tried it.
I think that's what I'm using, and I don't mind it. That's the one that I've actually like got me back into mayo. So that's really interesting that it's so that mayo. I never even thought about it being a very niche, you know, condiment. Like that, there is a lot of differences in the flavor profile. Like
I don't
people.
Stray from the Best Foods or Hellman's brand. I'm pretty dedicated to that now because I've tried so many other things. I'm like, okay, well, this one.
Oh, yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. See, I'll buy even the generic. I'm not picky as long as it's not Miracle Whip.
Mm. Yeah, I'm kind of in that camp too, Felicia. Because like I said, I'm using the Trader Joe's. I don't mind it. I'm only using it like on a sandwich. That's pretty much my use of mayonnaise. I'm not going to lie. Maybe on a burger or things like that, you know, in a, like a special sauce or something like that. But I keep it just sandwich land. But I miss it if I don't now have it on a sandwich. Whereas growing up, it was like, I'll have everything on that sandwich except for mayo. So it's funny how our tastes kind of change over the years. And now I love it up in that place. So yeah, but other than like sandwiches and salads, anything else as far as like, you know, staying cool in the kitchen this
smoothies.
Summer?
I've been obsessed
with smoothies,
which is nice because I think for a while I was overcomplicating the smoothie. You know, you got to get the protein powder and you got to get all the different fruits. And so now I just got a bag of frozen fruit from the grocery store and a big tub of greens. And I'm putting that in a blender with some almond milk and some hemp seeds. And it's good. You know, you get bored of that stuff too. And it's been a few years since I've really enjoyed it, but last night I ended up having one for dinner because I just didn't feel like cooking. And
yeah, that's actually I've been doing smoothies also more in the morning for like my first meal of the day. Very similar to what you just described. If I have like fresh fruit, I'll use that too, or a mix. And then the thing that I really love to always make sure I have on hand is banana, because it just adds like a creaminess to the shake. So I either have them on the counter, or if they're starting to go bad, I pop them in the freezer so they're frozen, and that actually like ups the smoothie as well. And then my trick, because I don't usually keep like almond milk or any like nut milks in the house, and I used to make it, you know, from scratch back in the day, but then I realized if I just add the handful of nuts and I add the water to the smoothie, it's making almond milk while I'm making my smoothie, and then I get the pulp and everything from the nuts, which is great for, you know, all the extra fiber, and it's, you know, one less step. So that's a method. And another trick that I heard or came across from a blogger out there, which I blew my mind the first time I saw it. And then I was like, oh my gosh, it's so obvious. But she was like, oh, here's my great recipe for almond milk. She's like, I take a tablespoon of almond butter, you know, and then add the water to the blender and then just blend it. Cause it just, you're basically, it's a concentrate. So you're just thinning it out, and now you've got yourself your almond milk that you would have been going through all that other, you know, soaking the nuts and things like that. So that's kind of also another thing. I'll just put in like a tablespoon of almond butter or peanut butter or peanuts. I even actually started putting peanuts in because I ran out of peanut butter and I was really enjoying that flavor. So now I'm just putting in a bit of the nuts directly. So that's kind of a little, I guess, a hack is like instead of having the you know, the almond beverage or whatever your milk substitute is, you can just add in the whole ingredients with some water.
Nice. I'm so glad you learn things every day, and this is
it's right? The little things, yeah.
I do love that because I you know, I used to make my own almond milk too, and then you go through the process just like juicing, right? Doing the juice because you want to be healthy, and then you have all these juice grounds. What do we call that? The scrap, and it's like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this? Because this is all really nutritious, and I don't want to just throw it away in the garbage. And it was the same thing with the nut milk because I feel like, you know, we're talking about 8 to 10 years ago when people were just starting to write recipes for it and really popularize it, I think, in the mainstream. And there wasn't an instruction on how to repurpose what was now becoming this, you know, like it was supposed to be healthy, but it's now a really wasteful thing. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot with a nut milk recipe. Nobody tells you how to use the pulp afterwards, which I like to dehydrate it and make a little flour.
I was just going to say, I'm starting to see more and more of people recognizing that. I even came across a product that is, it's like a, this, you know, like an appliance where you put in all your ingredients and it makes your nut milk, it strains, it does all, it looks great. It was wonderful. I was like, I was even tempted, even though I'm not even using it, but it was just like great marketing and all that. But what I really liked about the product is they had a whole section on their site about recipes for the leftover pulp. So I thought that was really, like, really cool and responsible that they weren't ignoring the fact that you're going to have all this leftover stuff. And they were making really cool stuff where they were adding in, like, even coconut flakes. So you were getting, like, a coconut, you know, infusion. And it was really cool. Gave me some good ideas, like, for my smoothies as far as, like, bringing in those flavors without having to go through the milk making stage. So, but I was just thinking, Felicia, you a couple episodes back, you said you're not even a smoothie, you don't even like smoothies very much. Is that still the case in the summer, or is it a seasonal thing for you?
No, I'm not a big smoothie person. Well, you know, I used to not even be a big juice person until we went and did that story at Juice Wave, and I was like converted. It was like this totally life-changing experience. I was like, oh my god, fresh juice can be like this, because in the, like, as you know, in the Middle East, fresh juice stands are everywhere, but they put so much sugar in it unless you tell them not to, or at least they do in the Gulf. But I'm kind of getting back into the juice at home. Same thing, I see the juicer machines, I'm like, ooh, I want that, but it's actually not very necessary. Every weekend, like, usually our lunch on the weekend is fresh juice. Like, Methy will just take whatever fresh fruit we have, usually like half a watermelon, and just blend it. Or I've been really into mango and pineapple, blending it and maybe watering it down a little bit, because it's pretty hearty. It's pretty intense juice. But it's so good. It's so refreshing and cold. And, you know, he'll just pulverize it and then add a little bit of ice to cool it down. And it's delicious. So I'm like, I don't think we need the extractor or anything. As long as you have a pretty strong blender, just throw your fruit in, you're good to go.
Right. And then you get those extra, the fiber and everything else that you would be tossing too, which is great. Yeah. It's more filling, I think. I always feel fuller after like a smoothie versus a juice.
Right.
Well, and I don't, I don't know that I even consider them smoothies, because they're really just the fruit.
Blended fruit.
Yeah.
Because when you get a big watermelon, it's like a slushy. And when you get a big watermelon, it's hard to eat it all. So by day 4 or 5, I've still got this massive bowl of chunked watermelon, and I'll just run it through the blender, and then you suck it down. And it's even sweeter, and it isn't a smoothie, like you say. What would we call it? A puree?
You're right. It isn't a smoothie.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just fresh juice. Oh, but I did. I had this like really random craving when I got super hot last week for this thing called a lemon ice. Do you remember those, Olivia? They were super popular in the Middle East. They would just call it the lemon ice. And all it is lemon juice and a ton of mint leaves and crushed ice and like sugar.
Yes.
It's essentially like a really tangy minty lemonade, but like with so much crushed ice, it's more like a slushy. And so I did one of those, and it was actually wonderful because I could control the sweetness because I was making it myself, and you know, just put a little bit of like sugar substitute in there, and it was super refreshing.
Yeah,
And the key was that mint.
yes, I was gonna say I love the mint in there. And yeah, so we have that also in Israel too. We call it a limonana, which is like lemon and mint. So nana is the mint and limon is the lemon. And what we do, what's also there is they also add arak, the like, and
Oh,
yeah, I was gonna say, so a little
for a
different,
kick.
yeah, a little kick. You can get it like on the beach, like that, and it's all blended up, so it's like kind of like frosty, but you have the fresh mint, so you've got those little speckles of green through there. So it's a beautiful drink. It's so refreshing with or without the arak, which is a like fennel anise flavored liquor. And it's great. I was gonna say I've made a version with watermelon added, so that
Ooh.
way you don't have to add like the sugar so much, you know, or you can leave it out completely, I guess, and it kind of balances things out. Or just heavier on the watermelon than the lemon juice, and then you get a little bit sweeter of a profile. But yeah, I have actually a huge watermelon in the fridge that I think I'm gonna have to get some mint to go with now. So.
That's
Nice.
we have a watermelon soup, so it's just cut up watermelon. You add extra water, a little bit of sugar, 'cause it depends on how sweet the watermelon is, and fresh mint, and then you chill it so it's nice and ice cold when you serve
Oh,
it. You serve
wow.
it with ice cubes in it, and you just slurp it up. It's really
Wow. Like, is that your
fantastic.
thing? Or do you meant like a Korean dish
I
or?
don't know if it's a Korean dish. It was introduced to me by a Korean aunt, but it's so simple, and I do it every year for sure, because
Wow.
especially when it's super hot, it's just
Yeah. It's
so
like a
refreshing,
gazpacho, but with watermelon. It's
right?
like a
We do,
sweet, but sweeter. I guess it's sweeter than like a gazpacho would be, which is like savory, but it's cold, right? You're saying it's a cold soup.
yes. And Koreans have this summer dish. I'm trying to look up the name. It's called, I think it's called I'm horrible at pronunciation, Naengmyeon, but. Nothing says summer to me more than seeing my mom eat this dish. Like, I've never eaten it because I find it a little bit off-putting.
Just seeing her eat it makes you feel
Just
like it's
seeing her, but
summertime.
no, I feel like it's summer because it's summer. We go to the Korean restaurant and my mom gets this massive bowl of naengmyeon, and it's acorn noodles and like a chilled beef broth with ginger and like, I don't know, shaved onions, and they serve it with ice, and she just loves this dish. It's
Wow.
so funny. I should like get the courage to actually go and try it, since we can't be with her this summer.
Did you say acorn noodles? Is that like it's
Acorn
made from acorn
noodles.
flour? Wow, I've
Very
never
healthy
heard
for
that.
you. It's interesting because there's so many different alternative noodles in Asian cuisine, but in Korean cuisine specifically, they have acorn noodles that are really highly nutritious and gluten-free of all things. And then the japchae noodle is a sweet potato noodle that's, you know, you have to look at the ingredients, because I think now as things become more commercialized, they are imparting a lot of filler and preservative and different things that you wouldn't have seen there before, but it's generally just sweet potato starch, and they're kind of chewy. I like them. They're good.
I love
Me
those.
too.
Yeah.
So I've heard of people. Oh, go ahead.
What do you guys do for protein, on your assembly meals?
I like to kind of batch things, you know, one day a week. So I might bake off a few bricks of marinated tofu, or chicken breast or canned tuna. Lately, I don't know if it's the pandemic, but we've been not too badly obsessed with spam, but I've definitely eaten more of it in the past 6 months than I've eaten like my whole life, which isn't saying a lot. I think we probably had it like 10 times, but it's kind of nice to just grab something from the cabinet, especially a can of tuna fish. I did that the other day for lunch. I just opened a can of tuna fish and dressed it with the whatever and
I'm
greens.
so glad you brought up tuna, 'cause I have had like a tuna revelation
Oh,
recently.
share,
I
share.
mean, well, Methy, that's like his bachelor food. He's always loved canned tuna. Like, he'll saute it with like peppers and stuff. I'm like, it's cooked already, but he likes to saute it up with other things. And
That's cute.
I always hated it. And so I was like, you can eat that when I'm not home. But then I realized it's because I've been buying the poor man gross tuna in like weird, like discount olive, or not olive oil, just like weird oils and water. And he was like, why are you buying this tuna and water? I'm like, that's what I grew up with, tuna packed in water, you know,
Right,
it's
the
healthy.
water.
He was like, that's disgusting. It has to be in olive oil. And I was like, what? So I went on this search for olive oil packed tuna and found it. It's a little more expensive, totally different product. Like,
Yes,
it is
yes.
so tasty and easy, and you grab it, and I was like, wow, I've just been eating the wrong tuna my whole life. So I don't know. Did maybe you guys already knew? Like, I had never even thought to get oil packed tuna.
My exposure also was actually through Shai, when I'm in the Middle East. Also, I guess they're just clued in over there faster than us when it comes to quality canned fish. I mean, I'm sure if we grew up in Spain, we would have known this 100%. Like, they eat a lot of canned seafood. But yeah, I also in Israel fell in love with, I didn't fall in love with tuna, but I started enjoying it more, let's just say. And it was always oil packed. I just found it, like, the flavor was better, the texture, everything was better. It wasn't dry. I didn't even do like a mayo, salad, dressing with it. It was more of like you just add some lemon, chop up some capers in there, like all sorts of kind of like pickly things. And Shai's favorite thing was just literally like put that in a pita, call it a day. So those are like nice simple assembly items still to this day here, like now that we're in the States.
Although I find it somewhat challenging to find good olive oil packed tuna. Like, there will be half the row is still this water packed tuna, and then there's like this teeny tiny section of like the oil packed. So maybe it is like an American thing
The
to
water
have it.
packing. Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, I don't know about that, but I think the water packing came into play probably to save money at some point, I would imagine. And then it does tend to have, like, I guess less flavor, but I like the water packed. I'll say, I think, what is it? Genova is one of the better brands that I've had that's oil packed. It comes in a gold can. And they are from the Mediterranean, I believe, or it's Italian. So it's interesting because I know on an Italian tuna sandwich, when you go to an Italian restaurant, it's very different than like a Subway tuna sandwich, which is all watery and mayoey, but it's almost like just the meat, and then you can tell like they didn't really dress it with anything other than adding like chopped onion or whatever because it already came in the oil, and it's delicious, I would agree.
Well, I guess we can wrap things up here, and we'll be back next week with another episode, our finale for season one, before we take a little break and get back with some new content for you guys. We're playing around with some themes and different guests that we want to have come on. So be sure to subscribe, to rate, and to review our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. And we'll be back next week. Have a great
Yay.
week, ladies.
Bye.
You too.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Modern Casserole. You can find our show notes at moderncasserole.com with links, photos, and recipes from this week's episode. Subscribe today on our website and everywhere podcasts are available.